We all want to fly like eagles into the future. We don't want to get older huffing like a puffin, but we resign ourselves to the loss of our powers. We stop soaring and maybe find ourselves flapping instead. And this need not be, says neuroscience writer David Robson. David wrote The Intelligence Trap, about how individuals and organizations can improve their learning and decision making. And we talked to him about that book in 2019. The interview's still online. And you can find his byline on BBC Future, New Scientist, Nature, The Guardian, The Observer and The Washington Post. This time we want to discuss with him something new he's written, The Seven Primes of Life, why each decade comes with its own superpowers. Hello, David. It's nice to talk to you again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
With the Olympics on, can we start by talking briefly about realistic expectations of physical and mental performance in certain events? I mean, we have Dame Valerie Adams coming up in the shot put. She's 36. She's a marvel, really, because those kinds of explosive events that she's in, they definitely favour youth, don't they, David?
Yeah, that's totally right. I mean, you know, for those kinds of explosive events, so shot puts, but also the kind of really short sprinting events like the 100 metres, the average age of kind of peak performance for those tends to be in around the mid-20s. And that's just because soon after adolescence, in fact, when you're early 20s, you start to kind of lose these fast twitch muscles that help you to kind of release that energy that you need for those events and over the very short term. You can make up for that a bit with the kind of experience that you gain with training. So you can last for a few more years and may hit your peak at 25 or 26.
Which should make us admire people like footballers at the Olympics even more, because they require explosive energy too.
But I also think with football, what's interesting is you do need the explosive energy, but you also need the kind of strategy and the kind of emotional regulation to be able to deal with that kind of pressure and to think on your feet and to, you know, to kind of think your way through the game.
Speaking of that pressure, television coverage is getting more and more adroit and intimate, and we're seeing that pressure in occasions like the Olympics more and more, aren't we? It's interesting.
And what's become more and more apparent to me is that so many sports are not just a feat of the kind of physical body, but they really involve the mind just so much, as much as the body, or maybe even more.
We've seen the 46-year-old gymnast at these games. What events suit older athletes better?
Where you need to learn kind of lots of routines, where you can maybe draw on all your experience from the past, those are going to tend to favour the older athletes. And it's really a question of kind of the payoffs and the cost of your age, so the experience compared to the slight decline in your body as you get older.
And even after your 30s and 40s, the decline, speaking of endurance and strategy, the decline is gradual. But you mentioned mental ability. Mentally, the rot sets in quite early in life, doesn't it, as well?
Well, it depends what you're measuring, really. So a bit like with our fast twitch muscles, which are, you know, slowly kind of decaying as we age, our brain becomes a little bit slower at processing. So what you find is that things like working memory, so how many pieces of information you can keep in your mind at one time, so like the digits of a phone number, that actually peaks a little bit later into your 30s. And then things like emotional intelligence, so dealing with your own emotions and being sensitive to other people's emotions, that peaks in your 40s. So does your mental focus, so just how long you can stay focused on a task, that actually peaks in your 40s as well. You're less easily distracted. And I think we really need to kind of change this idea that actually it's just an inevitable decline in every way from, say, your mid-20s. There's actually a lot to look forward to as you get older.
There's a creative decline. Before we get to what we can look forward to, there's a creative decline, though, and we see it in popular culture a lot. You know, the songwriters who are brilliant when they're young but can't seem to muster, you know, the same wonderful talent or harness it when they're older. But there are also exceptions. I mean, artists come to fame late. I think Cézanne was a great example. You know, writers like Robert Frost and Mark Twain, Alfred Hitchcock, the director. It isn't a script. I mean, most people probably fit into the script, but there are always exceptions out there, David.
That's absolutely true. And actually, I'm currently working on a book, The Expectation Effect, that kind of questions how much of what happens as we age depends on just the kind of scripts we've been given by society rather than being a kind of biological inevitability. And I would say that this kind of idea that your creativity kind of dries up as you get older, I quite strongly believe that that's caused by our expectations rather than actually being absolutely inevitable in our lives. And like you said, there's so many good examples where that didn't happen. You know, you had people like Picasso, who started working on his kind of ceramics into his 60s. And, you know, that was like a kind of new renaissance for him. He found so much creativity there. The same with Matisse, with his paper cutouts. And you have novelists like Penelope Fitzgerald. You know, I don't think her first book was published until she was in her late 50s or early 60s. And her masterpiece came about a decade after her first book was published. So she, you know, she kind of shows us that actually there is creativity in old age, and it's really as much about kind of how we choose to use it and express it as it is to do with any actual changes that are happening in the brain at that age.
We love hearing about the silver lining, to use your phrase actually, in this ever descending dark cloud. So skills keep developing. Libido declines gradually, but in concert with that, you write, a zest for life increases. So all those television ads for retirement villages showing the elderly having the times of their lives are in fact correct. How do we know this? This is so interesting.
Well, so there have been lots of studies kind of tracing people's life satisfaction using various types of questionnaires. And, you know, they do find that actually we're kind of happiest early in life at, say, in our late adolescence, early 20s. And already then it's kind of dipping. So you might look at your 20s as being this kind of peak of your life where you were so, so happy, so excited. But actually, you know, your happiness is already on the decline, you know, quite early on in your 20s. We have a reminiscence bump, it's called. And that means that we preferentially remember things from our 20s because so much was happening there. And we do seem to kind of view that with rose-tinted glasses. So the way you remember your 20s might actually be more positive than it actually is. But when you ask people kind of in their 20s how they feel, their life satisfaction often isn't as great as you might expect. And then it kind of continues to decline for our 30s and 40s, and then starts to pick up in our late 50s. And actually, by, say, your 60s, it's already getting to the kind of level that you would have had in late adolescence, the previous happiest time of your life. So you're really rediscovering what makes you happy, and you have the freedom to then to find that fulfillment.
Yes, we've heard this warranted a lot. It's interesting that it's backed up by studies, and of course you've looked at a few. The elixir of youth, though, in that older age, is in fact exercise, isn't it? That starts to be really crucial when you get to your late 60s, 70s, whatever.
Yeah, that's totally true. And actually, and I find quite surprisingly, it's only relatively recently that kind of physiologists have come to this conclusion. So one of the researchers I spoke to pointed out that, say, 20 or 30 years ago, the advice was actually that old people shouldn't do too much exercise, or they might kind of risk overexerting themselves and, you know, injuring themselves, or kind of risk straining their heart too much. But what we actually now know is that the more physical exercise you do as you get older, the healthier you're going to be. Getting as much exercise as you can, and realizing that you can actually build up from a little bit of exercise to kind of more intense workouts, that can actually be incredibly helpful for increasing your health span. So making sure that as you age, you're as healthy as you possibly can be, and to minimize your chances of getting those age-related diseases.
We're talking with David Robson about the seven primes of life, to go with Shakespeare's Seven Ages of Man. Now, first of all, we should say the oft-quoted fact that the brain matures fully by age 25. We hear it said all the time. You say that's bunkum.
Yeah, exactly. And essentially what the research shows is that, you know, your brain is kind of adapting to its environment and to its experience all through your life. And what we see later in life especially is that your crystallized intelligence actually peaks at around age 70. So that's things like your vocabulary and your expressive power, how well you can describe the kind of life around you. That's actually reached its peak at age 70 rather than, you know, in your early 20s. So there really is a lot for your brain to kind of do as it gets older.
The greatness of childhood. Can we touch on that? We know about its wonder and its delight. What else does childhood bestow in particular?
If you just think of a kind of how many ways that a child can kind of consider counterfactual thoughts, and, you know, like all of those kind of things, like an imaginary friend or kind of entering an imaginary universe. You know, children love to tell stories to themselves, and that's something we can do as adults, but many people lose it, whereas children just do that naturally. And what that imaginative play does is it actually helps the child to consider lots of different types of situations. So it's kind of preempting what might happen to it in later life and trying to work out kind of how it should respond in each case. So in some ways, the imaginative learning actually powers its other kinds of thinking to allow it to understand people and to understand the kind of complexities of the world around it.
Out of interest, just by the by, there are adults, probably more than they'd care to admit, that remain in imaginary worlds, stay childlike all their lives, and quite possibly, you know, more game players now in their teens and 20s and 30s are too. Do you think that might confer an advantage later in life for original thinking and exploring consequences if you can retain that childishness?
I feel like there just aren't the studies yet, but my intuition is that that is absolutely true, because you're still exercising that kind of thinking. And, you know, counterfactual thinking is actually super important in so much of adult life. You know, to be able to consider alternative kind of paths in your life could help you to, you know, change direction in your career, for instance. Whereas if you're only considering what's literally in front of you and you can't imagine any other situation, you're going to find that a little bit harder. It's a form of brain training, and it can really help to sharpen these skills that are essential for living a happy and fulfilling life.
It's also a useful form of brain protection, isn't it, as well? It stops the hard world crowding in too much and too often sometimes for a lot of people, and maybe that's just fine.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I don't think that anyone should kind of hold a kind of snobbery against escapism, because sometimes it's just really important for our well-being. And, you know, I think sometimes by considering positive alternatives, even when the world around you seems quite dark, that actually that can be empowering and then can help you to deal with the actual challenges that you're going to have to face.
The second age is adolescence, the time of irresponsibility and impetuousness and silliness and rebellion. And you say, hang on, this is a generalization based on limited evidence.
That's right, yeah. You know, adolescence is a time where we're trying to set up a kind of social sphere and kind of build friendships that will help us throughout life. And sometimes, you know, those friendships are built on kind of risky behaviors that might not seem so wise, you know, things like drinking too much, maybe kind of driving dangerously, you know, things that certainly shouldn't be advised. But actually kind of taking those risks can cement those friendships, and then those friendships can serve a really good purpose later in life. So basically, we should stop giving adolescents such a hard time and start asking kind of what are the benefits of their behaviours, as well as what are the disadvantages, and how can we help them to navigate that in the safest possible way while still allowing them to kind of experiment and to learn about life.
Yeah, it's a nice attitude. So continuing to master new skills throughout life boosts brain health, but brain health does seem to reach its zenith in your 20s. I think I've got that right. But in fact, in that decade, in your 20s, you are brain deficient as well. Deficient in what?
This kind of deliberative, slow, deliberative and wise kind of reasoning. And that is a skill that we find actually peaks in people's 70s. So much later in life. It's intellectual humility, being able to kind of recognize the limits of your knowledge, being able to take other people's perspectives, being able to compromise, you know, all of these skills that could be useful in negotiations or when dealing with your loved ones or when navigating kind of complex situations. People in their 20s perform so much worse than people in their 70s. So even though they might have that kind of really quick brain, those quick reaction times, they're good at kind of encountering kind of novel technical problems or thinking abstractly, you know, about kind of how to use technology or how to code. They perform a lot worse on this wise reasoning. And actually, when we're trying to deal with like real complex social problems, it's the older people that we should be looking for advice.
So they're the ones who should be in Parliament. No one under 70 should really be making national decisions.
Well, you know, I do think that it really struck me when during the US election that there was a lot of ageism around Joe Biden, you know, and Donald Trump, for right or wrong. But I feel like, you know, actually, like, we should just take their age out of that, because there's no reason why someone in their 70s shouldn't be in that kind of position. And actually, there are some very good reasons why someone in their 70s might be better suited than someone who's younger. So there'll be a lot of individual variation, and you might have someone in their 40s who has already cultivated those skills. But we certainly shouldn't judge someone harshly just because they're older.
We're getting older as we go in this chat, because I'm up to the 30s. And for many people, the big 3-0, I think, is a more despairing moment than the big 4-0 or turning 50. So what's great about being 30-something, David?
Your working memory. You're able to juggle a lot in your mind at once. And it's very easy to see how that could be useful if you're kind of dealing with your job and you're dealing with a young family as well. You know, you're suddenly having to think of lots of different things all at once, and your working memory might just help you to do that.
Life begins at 40. You don't hear that said as much now, if at all, but the 40s were more revered in past times, you say.
It's difficult to understand why we've started to kind of view our 40s more negatively. And I just wonder if it is this kind of body fascism that we have these days, that it's as soon as you start to show the signs of aging, you know, we see that as like this incredibly bad thing. But actually, there is a lot to look forward to in our 40s. And, you know, that includes this kind of incredible mental focus. It includes an emotional sensitivity, so that we're much better at reading other people's emotions when we're in our 40s.
People in their late 40s score best in a test called Mind in the Eyes. What's that for people who've never heard of it?
So that's a measure of this kind of emotional sensitivity. And essentially, scientists give their participants images of people's faces kind of just cut around the eyes. So all you see is the kind of slight change in expression around the eyes. And the participants have to say kind of what that person is feeling, whether they're kind of happy, disgusted, scared, you know, just from these quite subtle changes in someone's appearance. There's no kind of big smile that can help you to guess, or kind of an open mouth with fear. You just have the eyes to look at. So it's really, you know, you have to be quite sensitive to be able to read that. And what you find is that people in their late 40s are much better at this than anyone else.
I've read the claim that many ailments and diseases start setting in statistically at age 45, but you say, contrary to popularly held views, humans seem to have evolved to flourish into middle age and beyond. It's not just a slow exit, it's actually a thriving. In past generations, I think people were almost taught, coached, to coast towards age 65 and then do gardening and bowls. No slight intended on either occupation. But that has changed. And we now know, and you write a bit about this, the potential of being between 50 and 70. We now know what we should be doing.
So what researchers have found is that when people feel that they have a sense of control over their life and that they can kind of determine their own fate, that they actually age more slowly than people who don't have that mindset. That could partly be because they deal with stress a little bit better. You know, if you feel in control, you're not so likely to feel stressed. It's also just because if you have that mindset, you're going to remain more active. And as we've discussed earlier, staying physically active will itself protect you against age-related diseases. Our health is within our own hands, and we do have a say in kind of how we age as we get older.
The seven primes of life, David Robson, is talking to us, and a few more questions. And just apropos of what you've said, in some ways we give up still these days when we knock, when we're knocking on the door of old age. Like you say, we use GPS too much when we're driving, for instance.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons that people's memories might decline. It's not that there's already started to be this kind of biological change in their brains, but actually people just lose confidence in their own memories. And so if they're kind of navigating to a new place, they'll always rely on the GPS system rather than maybe after a few times try to rely on their memories instead. So if, because of your low confidence in your memory capacity, you stop using your memory, then that's actually going to precipitate the decline. So it becomes a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy. This has been shown in lots of experiments that older people's memories are often better than they expect. But over time, if they have those negative expectations and then stop using their memories, then they do see the decline. And whereas things like IQ do seem to decline as people get older, what we find is that wise reasoning doesn't. It increases as we get older. And so I believe that by recognizing that and kind of making the most of that, we can change our whole attitude to aging, and that we might actually realize that there's some people around us that we're not really appreciating, yet their help with our decision making could be really important.
That is a very good note to end on. I think you were the youngest ever features editor for New Scientist. So you didn't have much wisdom at that stage, but you were able to hold a lot in your head and be very mentally agile. What do you reckon is the age? I mean, if you could childishly, I suppose, put yourself back in time, as people do sometimes at, when they sit around a table and talk about the perfect age, what would it be for you, do you think? When are we just overall best?
So I'm in my mid-30s now. So I'm going to say in my mid-30s. It's really easy to be wistful. You know, we want to be younger, we want to be older, you know, we're never satisfied with what we have at the moment. But actually, I really think that actually whatever age we are, there's a really like a lot to appreciate. And so that's the kind of mindset that I'm trying to cultivate now, is to recognize that, you know, I'm 35 now. Even when I get to 40, 50, 60, 70, there's always something good to look forward to.
And we are selective with our recall. You've just reminded me that when I was age 22, I wanted to be older. You know, I didn't really want to hang around in my early 20s. They weren't much fun at all. So it is very much subjective, and you can look at it lots of ways, can't you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I was exactly the same when I was in my early 20s. You know, I would say I was quite unhappy in my early 20s because there was a lot of frustration that I wasn't getting to where I wanted to be with life. You know, there's always going to be advantages and disadvantages to each age in life. But the important thing is to kind of try to focus on the advantages and to make the most of them, whatever they are.
Yeah, no, well said. And thank you very much for your time again, David, talking to us. Very good to chat with you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
David Robson.